What's up, everybody? Welcome to the CaliCast. I'm Uriah Faber, the California kid. Be spitting some knowledge, telling stories, and having a good time. What's up, guys? Welcome back to MMAU under the CaliCast. This podcast, in particular, the MMAU part, is about teaching you guys everything under the sun, a bunch of stuff I wish I knew, stuff I've learned throughout the history of being a professional fighter, get my first check, buy my first house, understanding credit, et cetera, et cetera, on top of all the different disciplines that make up mixed martial arts. So today we're going to have a great friend of mine on. He's a specialist in basically debt and understanding about credit scores, about getting out of debt, understands from firsthand how to get into it, and everything in between. So that's what we're going to touch on today, but let me introduce you first to Jason. Jason, like I said, is a great friend of mine. When did we meet?
2004, man. I was friends with a guy, Jeremy Dunmore, who I'd known since I was 16.
Right. Dunmores.
He's a character, man. I love that guy. Yeah, we had some.
So Dunmore was one, just for context here. Jeremy and Sid Dunmore were one of my first sponsors. Actually, it was a reference from a friend of a friend, and the guy wanted to get into heard about me as a fighter and pulled me into his van at the time. He used to have a van where he'd have a bunch of drinks and all sorts of stuff in there. Yeah. Pulled up. I'm a struggling guy. Just graduated college. Didn't have a dime to my name, and.
They were rolling at the time.
It was where the real estate market was booming, and they come from a family of developers. And pulled me into this van, and he said, "Hey, we heard some good things about you." And then he says, and he's pretty high at this point and drinking midday, and he says, "Let me see your abs." And I'm like, I just got pulled into this van, and he's like, "Let me see your abs." Okay. I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Let me see your abs." He goes, "Yeah, I'm on this fitness journey," and blah, blah, blah. That starts going off on these things. That transferred into becoming my first sponsor. He was a great friend of yours, and we actually met because I was sponsored by him. I had a henna tattoo on my back at a tiny little fight in the indie casino, and gave the guy a shout out after that. And that's the first time we met. That's right.
And those were such wild days, man. I mean, just me, because I wrestled. I mean, we would go to the Indian casino, and that's when you guys were coming up.
Yeah, it was illegal in California at the time.
And the UFC had just started out. So to me, I didn't even realize the levels in celebrity as far as when you were at the Indian casino, I was just as much as a fanboy as when you were a top guy in the UFC.
Right.
At that time, I'm like, hey, man, anybody that gets in the cage and knows how to wrestle and knows how to fight, I'm already.
That's your guy,
You got me,
Yeah.
So it was just funny, man. You would go to these Indian casinos, and there would be these, crazy bikers, and just a really, a very,
eclectic.
Unsavory, eclectic crowd.
You got missing teeth and beer spilling on people, and chicks basically in their little underwear in the crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, the crowd was literally right up to the cage. So it was like people breathing and spitting, could hit you in the cage, really, if you're lucky enough. But at this time, remember, we had our first real interaction. We went to Florida, and like I said, I was getting sponsored by Dunmore. You at the time were doing the real estate thing. What was it?
No, I was doing insurance, and I was down. We were in a separate group. You were with Jeremy, and it just happened to be that I was down there with some good friends of mine too. Some cool guys. Some guys from San Francisco. Guys from up here, and we met up. And
whoop
that dude up in a cage at the Calusa Casino. I knew you were a fighter, and then Jeremy introduced you as his bodyguard.
It was funny. I didn't even know that going into it. I'm in your bodyguard. I'm like a 5'5" and 138 pounds. And that was fun. That was a wild time. We're in South Beach. Like I said, I was broke as a joke, just there as a spectator, and you're just getting going on your career.
Yeah.
And you fast forward till this day and age. Jason and I are both part of a group called EL, Entrepreneurial Organization. We've got about 12 peers that we're, all business guys and bounce ideas off of each other. And I think this is such an important topic to touch on for you fighters that don't understand. And I come from a family where, you know, we had on both sides of the family people that weren't afraid to follow their dreams and had to kind of be their own dictator on what they did in life. We had a coffee shop on my mom's side that we started as a family, a tiny little 400 square foot coffee shop. And before that, my mom worked at Nordstrom's, and my stepdad worked at worked for the city, you know, mowing lawns and that kind of stuff. My dad, on the other hand, was first a carpenter and then a independent contractor for building houses and whatnot, but was never great with cash, but with a passionate guy and a skilled guy. So I've had a lot of different lessons throughout life that have come from trial and error, learning from my parents when I could, but realizing that you kind of have to find it out your own way. What was kind of your upbringing? What was that like growing up?
My upbringing was pretty unconventional, to say the least, man. My real father, was older. I think he was in his mid-40s, and I think he met my mom when she was like 18. My mom was a very attractive young woman. She was very into the party and, you know, having fun. I believe at like 15 years old, she ran away with the Oakland Hells Angels. And literally her first love of her life was one of the guys that was in the Filthy Few. A guy by the name of Winston.
What's the Filthy Few?
It's like an elite group of these guys that were like a members inside of a members. I don't know exactly.
In the Hells Angels. Oh, gotcha.
And okay. This is like the times when that was like at the height. You know, you had Sonny Barger was the president. And it was just a...
Yes.
It was an interesting time. And so my mom was very into that biker culture. So when she met my dad, he was kind of was a developer and did like developed homes and was kind of a business guy. I remember he had fields of marijuana in back of the barn. I remember that.
So that was before like the legal. Gallery,
oh,
about
yeah,
the
70s that was way
or what?
Before it was legal, man. So, and I remember he would have these rooster fights too. He would have cockfighting things, you know. So these are just kind of little childhood memories. And my mom was not the easiest lady to get along with. And I don't know, you know, what his problems was. I think he was, you know, kind of heavy in the drinking. So they had a lot of friction and we ended up leaving him. I remember I was probably 4 or 5 years old.
Gotcha.
And it was kind of a shitty situation because when she left him, it wasn't like she was going to co-parent with the guy. I mean, he would try to kind of come around, try to do his thing. But she was like one of these ladies that, it's just like you don't want to cross her, and she just could make things very, very difficult. So it was funny. So we ended up, Rockland was where I started growing up.
Huh.
I remember in the middle of the night leaving the house, there was some domestic kind of abuse stuff going on. And my I think it was my little sister and myself, and she grabbed us, and we left in the middle of the night. We went down to San Francisco, and then she had this boyfriend that was living in San Francisco that owned a bar. And I remember I really didn't care for this guy. I didn't care for San Francisco. I remember, you know, and then the next thing you know, we had a car. And I remember this guy that she was dating at the time that was, you know, she was in love with ended up going missing. And basically the guy got killed. So and the thing I remember the most is the guy, we couldn't get our car. Because the guy had gotten killed in the car, and it was the body had sitting there for, you know, like 3-4 weeks.
Oh my gosh! So that was you think that was Hell's Angel related, possibly?
No, I don't think that was. That was its own thing, man. You know, and to be honest, man, when she was friends in the biker culture and with, you know, some Hell's Angel guys or some other biker guys that weren't Hell's Angels. Those guys were always super, super respectful to me as a kid.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot of things is there that culture, man, like just, you know, certain things about lying and credibility. You know, people look at those kind of outlaw type cultures and they might think one thing about
just
the way
think it's all bad,
live,
but there's
but
some,
there's
some
good those
people.
Guys live by a certain set of rules. So I would say the good is I took away some of that. Now, at the same token, like, I just wanted to be a normal kid. I wanted to play sports. I wanted to have, like, a track home and a Toyota Corolla and a mom that said hi when she came home. this wasn't it, man. You know, my mom was a tough lady with tattoos and, you know, just a different type of lady. So I don't want to get into what she did wrong or right or whatever. At this point, it doesn't matter. But she definitely was not conventional.
Right, you know? And so that makes for it. And I know we've talked about it because you're an athlete also, being a wrestler in high school. And we'll put some pictures up of Bartlett in his heyday. He'll like that. He needs that these days, you know. But from football and wrestling and, you know, jumped around quite a bit.
Yeah.
At one point, you're shipped out with some family members.
Yeah.
And
So my whole childhood was sports. That I didn't care about school. I didn't care. I wanted to play baseball. I wanted to play football. And then once I found wrestling in the seventh grade, then I just fell in love with that. And I fell in love with Coach Green. You know, he was my first real mentor.
Right. And Coach Green is someone that I know. Ironically, you know, Coach Green is a really good guy. Kind of took you in, became like an adopted family for you.
He ended up adopting me, him and his wife,
which is awesome. And there's so many great coaches out there that have been influential in people's lives. And luckily, you got a chance 100%. To be with him.
I don't know where I'd be without him and his wife. I mean, they were like a very, very pivotal moment in my time.
It
could have went all down a whole different path.
And Coach Green was actually an assistant coach when I did a college exchange in Japan. So when I was at UC Davis, I think my sophomore year, I was part of a group that went to Japan and we wrestled all the universities. And Coach Green happened to be one of our coaches. And we used to love hanging out with Bob, man.
Yeah.
We call him Bob the Badass and all these fun little things. But what a great spirit. So we had that connection as well.
But we didn't even know we had that connection. You know,
exactly.
That was the crazy part. And Bill will send me. Coach Green, Bill, will send me pictures of that little trip you guys had, like of you. I don't know how old you were. I mean, you must have been.
I was probably 21, 22. 21, yeah, well, what That's we did, and that trip was awesome. Coach Pachenko put it together. And literally, we'd go there. We're in a tour bus, and we'd drive to one university. We'd wrestle and beat the crap out of each other, then we'd all go drink beers afterwards and have a big feast. And so it was a super cool exchange. Sometimes we'd stay with other families, sometimes we're in little hotels, but I got to see Japan for the first time. And Bill, Coach Bill was an awesome part of that thing. Moving forward now, and again, on this MMAU segment, I want guys to get some nuggets out of this. And the biggest thing for me, like I said, my mom would always say that credit is second to your health. And for those that don't know, maybe you're a kid watching this, maybe you're an adult that's watching this. There's a lot to be known about how to navigate through this world. And basically, in my book, even I talk about personal credit and how important that is. Being a guy that people say, "Hey, that's Uriah Faber. When he says something, he means it. He follows through, etc., etc." That's what personal credit means to me. But there's a whole financial credit that people don't understand. It's the same thing basically, but it goes on the side of whether you're going to pay your debts, whether you are functional enough to do it, whether you take the right risks, etc. And so from your standpoint, kind of explain the importance of credit in today's day and age.
Well, credit's always going to be really important. And I've got sometimes, you know, we're programmed from when we're kids and, you know,
to really
put an importance on credit. And a lot of the time, sometimes it can also be to a fault. Okay. So credit is super important.
Right.
I always say to people, listen, if you have good credit, protect it, do well with it, be responsible with it. Don't go out and borrow crazy amounts of money and get yourself into a bad situation, because unfortunately that happens to a lot of people now. But be smart with it, and it can be a very good tool to get you into a good situation for a lot of different things. What I do see, though, and I want to hit on this because this is so important, is when people get into credit card debt or debt that's high interest compounding, daily compounding debt, I often find people that get stuck because they're in this situation where all of a sudden they don't want to take any action on getting rid of this credit card debt.
Right.
Okay, because they're scared that they're going to mess up their credit.
Right.
Okay. Now, I have a saying, man. Getting out of debt is the most important thing. And let me explain why.
Okay.
When you're making a payment on the interest and fees when you're, say, $10,000 in credit card debt, okay?
Right.
So let's say that the interest and the fees is going to be 3%. The payment's going to be 3% of $10,000. So
right.
I think that's $300 a month. So you're tossing away 80% of that is going towards interest and fees.
Right.
Every month that you don't have that credit card paid off. You'll never get that money back. That money's gone. So that would be the equivalent to going ahead and being in an accident and having like a part of your pinky cut off.
Right.
Okay. Once it's gone forever.
Right.
Credit, on the other hand, as important as it is, okay, it's like a cut. So if I go and cut myself, say when you're healed and you're smooth, that's when your credit's the best.
Right.
But I go ahead and get a gash. Say I need to negotiate some credit cards down and pay less than I owe, or I miss some payments because I got myself into a bad situation.
Right.
Okay. Credit can be healed.
Right.
And it can be fixed. Okay. So credit, as important as credit is, and it's important to be responsible with credit, don't use, I don't want to mess up my credit as an excuse to stay in some debt. That's
gotcha.
The only thing I could say. But any other time, you always want to be responsible. You always want to stay on track.
So let's rewind for a second, and yep. And that's we'll touch more on that.
Yeah.
Some people, and we're talking to maybe a junior high, a high school, a college, a fighter who may not come from a family that even tells
so
them
somebody
anything
that needs
about
to
credit.
Build the credit.
So first off, why is credit important? And then I want to tell you what my perspective, and you can mm-hmm. either chime in.
Yeah.
Then I want to touch in some basic pointers for kids or people to build their credit.
Yeah.
And then we can talk in about what you're talking about repairing or
yeah.
getting out of debt, et cetera.
Yeah.
When I was in college at UC Davis, and again, this is 1999 to 2003, credit card companies were always on campus, and they're trying to get I have so many free t-shirts.
Same here.
Because they're just like, hey, sign up, here's a credit card, and they're trying to look hook, line, and sinker to get you signed on. And I'm like, yeah, I want that free t-shirt or whatever they're giving away for free, and all of a sudden I have this credit card. And I've seen so many people ruin their credit because they've done that,
yep.
not understand what they're doing,
yep.
and understand how to function out of it. Now, why do you need credit? This is a simple answer from my perspective, but maybe you can add some value to it. But here's what it is. And I've talked to some of my wealthiest friends mm-hmm. and kind of asked their perspective on how they've gained their wealth, et cetera. And their answer a lot of times is don't be afraid to take on debt.
Yeah.
And that means don't be afraid to borrow money because if you use just the money you have, then you can only grow that
yeah.
so much. And we'll talk more about that in other segments. Yeah. But why do you need credit? Credit is basically saying, hey, we think you're going to pay us back.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a nicer car. You can buy a house. You can get approved to rent a apartment.
Mm-hmm.
You can get approved to do a lot of things based on people saying, hey, this is a person that is known to pay their bills.
Yep.
But you have to prove that in some way, shape, or form. We've got Tuss here she's from Australia,
mm-hmm.
and she was just saying, because she comes over here with nothing, she needs to learn how to build your credit.
Yeah.
And my mom would always be to the point of, hey, you know, you have to start somewhere. Get something small, get a credit card, whatever. Use it, pay it off. That's a track record. What are some good ways that people can, just beginning their life, build their credit?
Yeah. One of the best ways is you do get one of these credit cards in the mail, okay? But you've got to be responsible with it. I'll give you an example of myself. I remember my first credit card was a Sears credit card, and it was at Chico State, and I was one of the idiots that went and bought a camcorder and a new TV and the speakers, and I remember like those speakers and all that stuff I think got stolen at one point while I was in college, and then 6, 7, 8 years later, I remember paying the last payment on that with interest and probably paid triple what it was worth. So that's
right.
What you don't want to do. When you do use credit, I would say the best things to go ahead and get credit would be to get maybe one credit card, maybe get a car loan is a very good, and I think it's a necessary way to build credit.
Right.
Okay. And then maybe get one more trade line, and it can be a lot of different things. You know, it
get
it
a Home be, Depot.
You yeah, could go you to, get a Home Depot, whatever. But the key is really, man, build your credit. Build it off of there's revolving lines. That's when you have a line where you have, say, a credit card where you're like, oh, okay, this credit card has $5,000 on it.
Yeah.
Pay your credit card off every month, man.
Right.
Okay.
Because if you don't.
Then there's installment lines, like right. a house or a car. It's important to have those as well. So as a combination, if you've got three, if you've got revolving and those installments.
So tell me one more time. Revolving is?
Yes. A revolving line is like a credit card. Okay. So you can pay that off.
Gotcha.
Okay. So that's like I have $5,000 on this credit card. Okay. You want to never let your revolving line start building up.
Okay.
Unless it's a complete emergency. And then the first thing you should do is be focused on getting that paid back down.
Okay.
You don't want to have those hanging out there.
So the even if you don't need to use a credit card, would it be good to say, hey, look, I'm going to get say they give me a $2,000 credit.
Yeah. Yep.
Instead of using my $2,000 cash.
Yep.
Keep your cash on you.
Keep your cash.
Go buy your groceries with your credit card, buy your gas with your credit card, and then pay it off
at the end of the month.
At the end of the month. If you don't, how high legally are they allowed to charge you an interest, and what does that mean even? When it has,
they might have some fees, like an annual fee or something, but that's usually pretty minimal. With a credit card, you know, you're not getting charged interest unless you're not paying it off at the end of the month. So just keep on top of it, pay it off. That's
important. If you don't pay it off at the end of the month.
If you don't pay it off at the end of the month, then you're getting stuck with the big interest.
When you say big interest, just to put it in perspective.
I mean, you can be anywhere from 19 to 25%.
Right.
And the problem is, and it's very hard to explain, but they do like a daily compounding annual interest, like
okay, we got to keep this real simple.
I know, and I don't even really understand it completely. All I know is this: is it just keeps acquiring interest upon interest, and it doesn't pay off for a long time
if you don't pay it off. Yeah. So if you don't have the money, don't use your credit card.
No,
live below your means.
Correct.
If you have the money, use your credit card, pay it off to show that you're a credible person.
Correct.
And just so when
because if just, you just let a credit card just sit there and you never use it and you never do anything on it. It's not building your credit.
Right.
You know?
So a 19 to 23% interest, just to put this in perspective for people that may not have used a credit card or anything prior, that's a lot of interest. That's illegal to do loan sharking where you loan at that amount and get it back. But for a credit card, they've got the ability to do that, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So
in today's day and age, and people are talking about the low interest rates right now in the world, it's crazy. It's like a 2.5% interest rate that you could get to buy a house if you got great credit and everything else. 2.5% versus 25% interest rate, that's night and day,
categorized it into two categories. There's healthy debt and there's bad debt. Anything to do with you charging up a credit card and not paying it off, that's bad, unhealthy debt. That's like body fat. Healthy debt, okay, healthy fat, like an avocado or something, that would be if somebody goes out and purchases a house with some debt. You know what I'm saying? That's a good, healthy, that's healthy debt because real estate usually appreciates, not always. It could go down, it can go up. But this is something that you can look yourself in the mirror when you get up in the morning and be like, hey, man, I financed my house. I put a down payment on and now I have an asset here.
Yeah.
So anytime you're financing stuff that isn't an appreciating asset, then you got to be a little skeptical.
Okay.
A car's okay. A car, I would say a car and a house, but anything else. It's like, dude, don't finance it.
Let me put this in layman's terms so if you don't know what appreciating assets are, et cetera, which a lot of people don't. Basically, look, what he's saying is if you're going to buy something that is going to be worth more as time goes on, that's something that's good. If you're going to buy something that is going to lose value as time goes on, then that can be bad. And you need to buy both things, obviously, and you need to figure out how you can buy both things. But a simple example would be a house. The housing market throughout many years has shown that houses are getting more expensive.
For sure.
They're not making more space, etc. cars throughout history, unless it's some sort of classic special car, have shown that as soon as you drive it off the
lot,
it loses its value almost immediately. So that's just a simple way to show kind of like the two perspectives of what we're talking about here. But I think more important that for that is understand how when you want to buy things, when you want to get into an apartment or rent a house or anything else, everybody looks at your credit.
They say,
look at your credit. If you don't have credit, but you're a credible person, it doesn't matter. There's no proof that you're a credit
unless this is a buddy
that you pay your bills.
You know and personally can vouch for you and it's their house. But if you're going to a big apartment complex, they're not going to care. They have a formula they stick to.
Right. So step one, how do I build my credit? Find something that is affordable that you have to do anyways. Get a credit card. Use it for that you would have otherwise just paid cash.
Pay it off each month.
And pay it off each month. That's going to establish for you a good history of paying your bills. And that's going to tell the regular world that looks at your credit score, etc., that I'm a person that pays my debts. And so give me a kind of a range of what good credit and bad credit is and how those things are affected by being either on top of your stuff or away from it.
So
what's the top credit score?
A top credit score, I mean, you hear every once in a while, you hear people that get all the way up into like 800. I would say high sevens is very good. Even if you have even anything over 700, you're pretty good.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like 720 or above.
Are there some
three
ways
really
that people can check their credit score?
Yeah, there's different websites. I think there's Credit Karma and some different things, but you got to be careful too. Sometimes you go onto that and they want to charge you like a little monthly thing.
Right.
But there's different ways to check your credit.
But it's pretty simple. If you know that you've never had a credit card or bought a car or financed anything, you probably have no credit.
You have
right?
no credit. Yeah.
You have no credit, which is not bad and it's not good. It's a blank slate.
It's just a blank
then
slate.
It's kind of up to you. To figure out what you're going to do in this world, et cetera.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Correct. So, that's important when you get your credit and to know, man, it's like so many people kind of just go with blinders and don't know what their credit scores are. There's different things you can get on where every month they'll kind of report back to you and show you what your score is because there's three different credit bureaus.
Right. So just for fun, I want to talk about some of the famous people in this world. Tuss, do we have some of those famous people that we looked up that have made a lot of money? And here's the thing. People with hardly any money can have great credit. People with a lot of money can have terrible credit.
Terrible credit.
And when you think about this, and I'll go back to what I've been learning because I'm trying to learn from as many intelligent people, and that's why we're in the group that we're in, the EO group, everything else is, you know, I talked to my buddy who owns a jet, and he owns, you know, a $10 million house in Tahoe that he goes to when he wants. And he's got a place in Palm Springs and this and that. And I asked, I said, hey, what's the secret to growing big? Because I know people that have successful things, but you're on a different level.
Yeah.
What's the secret? And he says, not being afraid to take on debt.
Leveraging.
Leveraging.
Yeah.
Which means, in my perspective, it means as long as you're using it intelligently and you've done your research and learning how to grow money – don't be afraid to take it on.
And I'm going to take a wild guess. That's a real estate guy.
So real estate guys
have to – they're the masters of leveraging debt.
Right.
Developers, real estate guys, guys that hold assets in real estate, those are the masters.
Yeah. And so when we're talking about – should we pause for a second?
No, good.
Okay. So when we're talking about different types of a business, good credit – is always going to be an aid to you, right?
For sure.
And I think about actually we talked about the Dunmores, you know, not to slander the Dunmores, but to talk real life about their situation. And Dunmore, like I said, was our first connection.
Yeah.
He was sponsoring me. I had a henna tattoo of his Dunmore communities on my back, and you know they were helping us out, etc. But they went through, and I want to talk about your experience during this time also.
Mm-hmm.
I know my family had the same experience.
Yeah.
The major crash in the real estate market and the economy in general in 2007, 2008.
Yep, 2008. August.
2008.
Yep.
And the Dunmores got hit really hard by that.
As did every developer. There was nobody that went through that.
Everybody did. And I remember my parents, we had a tiny little coffee shop and started to buy these these little fixer-upper houses and then didn't fix them up. Mm-hmm. My parents during that time lost everything.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I was right when I started my fight career, and I was starting to make a little bit of money. I had mm-hmm. like 30 grand in the bank, and I thought I was rich, you know, and I ended up helping out, you know, buy something that was about to get taken away mm-hmm. or like pay up on a debt and then realize yep. like, oh, why'd I do that? You're just going to go behind again and,
yep.
and doing all these things. But during that time, the crash in 2008, it was pretty shocking to me who was in good leverage and bad leverage. I mean, the Dunmores were, I think, at $400 million in debt.
Yeah.
And it took good credit. Like,
yeah.
average Joe Schmo guy, you can't even get yourself in that kind of debt. No. You have to...
They had developed a lot of stuff
already, and
they got it rolling, man. And they were going all in, and they were... All in, as were there was a lot of developers like that.
And where were you at that time during this? Because you were having some success.
Yeah. I was selling insurance for the 10 years, and that's when I, you know.
This is 2000.
This is from 2000. I sold insurance up to 2006. So if I was doing that for 10 years, that was 1996
wow.
when I started in insurance as like a 22, 23-year-old guy, like way
right.
behind the ears. So I was making decent money selling insurance, having a good career, but it was a grind and it required me to be there 50 hours a week. And I started traveling and kind of getting to know these different guys that I was friends with when I was younger, like Hayden Markstein was a friend, you know, being around Jeremy. And kind of seeing, wow, you know, that next level, it's like I'm making great money working for this guy, but that next level of freedom and that next level of you know, making money is going to be owning your own business.
Right.
So what I had done is I went ahead and at 2006, I walked into my boss's office, which was a very nerve-wracking experience because this guy was an intense dude, and he didn't
probably
whoop
your ass too, knowing your background.
Huh? I don't think he could have whooped me.
Yeah,
I think I was good then, but he would whoop my ass in business. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So he ended up. I went into his office and I told him, "Hey, man, I'm going off on my own." He said, "Oh, an insurance?" And I said, "No." And Tori and I, it was almost a coin flip. It was like
Tori's your partner.
Yeah, Tori's my partner. And it was a coin flip. Like, hey, what are we going to do? Are we going to do insurance or you want to do this mortgage? Because he was doing mortgage. And he goes, I said, let's do mortgage, man. This insurance has so much paperwork and back end stuff. It gives me like a headache and mortgage is hot. So we went into mortgage literally with four like ragtag dudes and like he had no structure. He had these guys that were doing loans, but
what's the movie that tells the whole story of what happened with the real estate market and the mortgage and everything?
Yeah, The Big Short.
The Big Short. You guys any level, watch The Big Short and you'll get this is the time when all this is happening, right?
For sure.
That's a great movie, by the way.
For sure. So we kicked butt. We went in there. And
all the strippers. Started, the strippers have like
strippers
six houses.
Because they got the stated loans, you know.
Yeah.
So we went in there and we started killing it, man. We went from 4 to 80 guys in a year.
Wow.
And we were killing it. And I was, you know, having a good time. You know, I remember getting my Aston Martin and driving around and, you know, just all the dumb shit you do when you're, you know, young and, you know, you're first coming to a little
bit of
money.
Yeah. Pockets are full, not deep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So when the crash happened, it was so fast and I never saw it coming. We ended up going down to Cabo for a friend's wedding that was working for us.
Right.
My friend Darius. You've met Darius.
Yeah,
he's
Darius.
Cool. Darius.
Darius is the man.
Yeah, he's the man. So anyway, we come back and it was all of a sudden, you know, and the marketing cost a lot, just like it costs my business a lot now. When you do direct marketing, direct mail, it costs you a lot of money. So when you get those deals off of it and they're in the pipe, you're counting on those things to go through. And these loans say we're bringing in $25,000, $30,000 of revenue to the company. So we had like 80, 90, 100 loans. I can't remember exactly how much. And they all fell out. Boom.
Wow.
And it was like, it happened so fast. It was like, holy shit. And we sat there and we had a good amount of money saved up. We didn't blow it all, man. We had about $1 million in the business account.
Yeah.
And I remember sending out more mail and hoping it would get better. And literally, we just died the slow, rough death in the inexperience of not taking that money and walking away rather than chasing it, because this is our first time that we'd ever had any success. So I didn't want to close down my office with all my people, and I had all these, you know, employees and cubicles and just the space and everything. And it was like, I couldn't even have fathomed walking away from that and just saying, hey, I'm going to have to come back in 4 years and kick butt again. So it was a difficult time.
Yeah, that's wild. And I remember one of my favorite stories about you is when they were trying to repo your boat.
Yeah, yeah.
And you hid that thing out. And you know.
The guy, so we started our other business and we moved into an office over there by the fountains in Roseville.
Yeah.
And we had that going like with six people and we're kind of coming up. And it was hard, man, because I had a lot of stress and worries about creditors coming after me, about, you know, possibly having to do a bankruptcy. Like just like it was a lot of stress, like people coming. And so my partner, I said, dude, let's just give this boat back, man. What if I'm out like on a date with a girl or something and this repo dude's coming up to my table or something? You know, I had these little visions of what could possibly happen. And these repo guys were gnarly dudes, man, tatted up on the arms. Like they looked like they were, you know.
Yeah, they were ready to shake you down.
So this guy, I said, Tori, let's just give it back. He's, oh, no way, man. Just keep it in storage, dude. Keep it in storage, man. And I'm like, man, I don't know. Okay, fine. I'll do it, dude. So this guy comes barging into my office in front of my employees, my current employees. They have no idea that we're going through all this crazy stuff. I mean, they might have had a little idea, but.
Right.
And this guy comes up, and I remember just like getting up in his face and being like, hey, I said, dude, you're crossing the line. I said, don't come back into this office again or else there's going to be some problems.
You know?
And he ended up leaving that time, and we ended up negotiating out all our debt. And at the same time, this
you negotiated
new business,
the debt. We negotiated. So that we're going to touch on that a little bit because that's the new business that turned over.
And we were already doing this new business, and so this business is going skyrocketing up.
Yeah. So you negotiated out all your debt.
Correct. And then we ended up at the end. I've got this new business that's booming.
Yeah.
I've negotiated all this debt out.
Yeah.
Or cleared it out, and. At the end, I'm like, we still have this stupid boat. Let me call these guys and see if they'll take like pennies on the dollar for it. And it wasn't, I didn't even care about having this boat, man. At that point, man, I could care less. And we called them up. I think we owed like $120,000. It was like one of those really nice ski boats.
Man,
yeah.
I need one of those.
Yeah. We called them up and I said, hey, listen, we'll give you $30,000 for it. And then and this is after 3 years of trying to, you know, find this thing, whatever. He's like, right, why don't you just tell me where it's at? And I said, no, I'm not, you know, just tell me if you take $30,000. So we hung up. And at this point, I had no ethical problem going after banks and taking banks down. I'd worked with an old lady that got her house repoed after living in it for 80 years on a loan modification. And I just saw how ruthless the banks were to people. So at this point it's like me against them and I don't care.
Yeah. And I'm going to share my experience during that time also.
So anyway, so she ends, so we end up, he calls me back, the guy did, and said, we'll do it for 40. So we wrote him a check for $40,000 that day, and we had this boat, and it was just almost just like, it wasn't even like I wanted the boat. It was just like,
is it principal?
That was just the principal, man. And I like, funny. This is amazing, man. Someday I got to, you know, have a book that goes from like being just completely destroyed to back up on top. You know, it was like in a short period of time.
That's awesome.
And then back up on top, I mean, moderately successful in business. I'm not like saying it was like some crazy, you know, turnaround, but it was a pretty big one.
Yeah.
And I really relate to people that are in a bad situation or going through some bad situations, like right now with COVID, because I know when you're all screwed up and you can't make your payments and you're behind and your credit's screwed up, it can feel like you're never going to get out.
Yeah.
And there's a clear path out, man. There really is a clear path out, and it just takes persistence, some work, and just don't give up, and you'll be back out. And you know, that's the thing about the credit score. Listen, man, even if it's as bad as it is right now with people going through stuff they're going through,
not just we, but
there's people out there and there's ways to get it back into where you're back in the saddle and you have a 730, 740. I have an example of a lady that signed up 3 months ago that had a 540 credit score.
Yeah.
And I referred her over to my lady Ashley and she's already
540 is terrible.
Yeah, 540 is horrible. She's already up to a 730.
Wow.
She put three trade lines on her thing, and then not in a, you know, like a shady way. She has these different companies that will extend credit for certain people with bad credit. And she went ahead and got rid of the debt. We got rid of the debt. And then she sent out notices, and a lot of the stuff kind of fell off within that short period of time.
Wow, so that's crazy.
There's turnarounds that can be short.
So it doesn't usually
happen like that.
So here's me at the same time. Bartlett's, you know, got a couple years on me, and he's already, you know, been making some decent money. Then you started your own business. That was booming in a time where everybody that was in that mortgage industry was booming. The reason, and if you watch The Big Short, it'll make a little more sense to you. But I remember my first house, I was, and this is 2004 or 2005, I think 2005 at this time. I was making a couple thousand bucks fighting. I was on salary at UC Davis as a wrestling coach, and I was making $7,000 to $8,000 a year before taxes as a full-time job, which is well below the poverty line. In the summers, I was working wrestling camps and making a couple hundred bucks a year.
Not to interrupt you, man, but I remember when you won the King of the Cage belt, and we did this random fly in Jeremy's dad's jet, and flew over to Vegas and literally rocked it all night. And then I remember you were like, I was like, wow, man, Uriah hadn't even, you know, I don't know how much sleep he got, maybe like a half hour on the plane ride home, and you went to wrestling practice. So I can vouch
that. Oh, do you remember that? Hard, I don't remember
you
going.
You showed up. You showed up. I was like, wow, this dude went and went to I went home and slept for like 3 days. You know?
That's a lesson for my boys there. Yep. No excuses.
No excuses.
That was a fun trip, by the way. Yeah. That's another story. But for me at the time, I bought my first house. I have one of my college roommates, Yosef, out of the Bay Area. He's like, I was going to buy a house. This is 2005. At the time, to put in perspective, anybody could buy a house. They've got reverse.
If you have a heartbeat,
you can buy a house. Yeah. And they have something called a stated income.
Stated income pick-a-pay. So that's where they would make the payment low, and all the interest and principal would tack onto the back of the loan.
Yeah.
And then in 5 years,
reverse engineered.
It would adjust up. Yeah.
So they were doing, and they had all these creative ways to make sure that anybody could buy a house, because it was like greasing the system all the way through.
Yeah.
My buddy's like, hey, man, you can buy a house. I'm like, you sure, man? He goes, yeah. So this is how it happened, how I bought a house with no money. So I bought a $300,000 house in 2005, which my guy's like, yeah, you could do that. And I go, well, how?
In 2005, that's a decent, you know.
That's a nice house.
Yeah.
So then, but I was making, on paper, $7,000 a year. And I was getting some cash. I was making $1,000 here. I was selling some T-shirts with Alpha Male, making some money here, selling tickets right before I went out and fought.
Yeah.
And, you know. And the guy's like, yeah, I can get you a loan. And I go, well, how? He goes, well, you do a state income loan. And he's like, but you need to have a 2-year work history. And I go, well, I just graduated college. I haven't had a job or anything. He goes, well, what did you study? I was a human development major, which is for coaching. And I started a little business called TLC, Top of the Line Coaching. Uh-huh. And I was coaching kids wrestling. Then I was doing MMA practice. Then I was coaching UC Davis wrestling. And I was making hardly any money at all. And he says, well, because you studied teaching and now you have a business teaching, your time at college counts as a 2-year work history because you were working towards having coaching, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't know.
These mortgage guys will do anything.
They'll do anything, right? And at this time, like, everyone's greasing the system all the way through.
And it was started at the top. The reps would come into my office and they would teach our reps how to get the loans through.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, this is where you do it. Because if it goes to underwriting and they see and then they deny it, then there's a problem.
And everybody gets paid.
Yeah, the reps would show them, hey, listen, here's what you do. Here's how you do it, you know? And I'm not talking like on full-scale fraud things. I'm talking about just little tricks of the trade. And then obviously there was people that were doing fraud as well.
Right.
We never got into that, thank God. But, you know, this is not a good time now.
So here I am. I'm 20, so 2005, I may be 24 at the time, maybe 25 years old, and have no money. I have a bright future in my own mind, even though the UFC has not even really been established yet.
They
don't have my weight class or
Nobody
anything.
Nobody gets paid shit.
Yeah, I'm getting paid $1,000 to fight, plus my ticket sales. So sometimes I make like $1,500 and I fight.
The Indian casino.
There's no insurance. I have no insurance. If I break my hand or break a tooth or whatever, I'm just like shit out of luck. I'm fighting in Indian casinos. It was illegal at this time in California. And here I am buying a $300,000 house. So because my buddy's like, yeah, I'll get you a loan. No problem. I'm like, really? Buy a house? Well, whatever. And so here I am. I get my house. I end up realizing like I can't afford this house, so I move in. I move in all my roommates. Yeah, yeah. I move in Dustin Akbari, who's you know still our coach at Ultimate Fitness, and Matt Sanchez, who's now a big developer. Yeah. He's living on the couch and he's coaching, and you know, basically I filled my house with the guys, and everybody's sharing the responsibility of paying the bills, and I got through that time. The house went from a $300,000 house to a $120,000 house. I just stuck with it and wrote it out. During that time, I bought another house next door to it. And I bought another house next door to that. I ended up having four houses.
Oh, so it went down. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it went down, but I just was still making my payments and everything. I didn't do what a lot of people did, which crushed the economy, was just say, all right, screw my credit. Let it go, everything else. I just found a way. I toughed it out. Through the whole time, I maintained my credit, which I thought was super important.
Super.
But at this point now, so I'm seeing everything go down. I'm just starting to make money, and luckily, Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White have bought the UFC, and they've started to turn the thing around, and eventually get the Ultimate Fighter comes out, and eventually they add in a lighter weight class, and they add in my weight class, and then the WEC starts, and things start to stockpile for me. And I learned some hard lessons during that time about how to buy your first house, which we'll go over on this show later with another specialist. But today's topic, and I want to bring it back to you now that you have a business that helps people in this situation in particular, is you building your credit. And had I not had good credit at that time, I wouldn't even been able to, in the wild, wild west of buying houses, buy a house. But people said, hey, this guy's – I've been duped into having a credit card, spent it, paid it off once or twice, had enough of a credit to get a bank loan and put the whole thing together. So now fast forward for Level, and people can check out your business on top of this. Say somebody – levelfinancing.com. What does that look like for somebody that is coming to you and saying, hey, this is a revolving door of me just getting, you know, I'm having to pay all this money each month. It's not going away.
It's going in towards interest and fees.
And people are protecting, they're trying to protect their credit score, which I was always first. My mom said, hey, credit is second to none to health.
It's programmed in us, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing,
but it can be a bad thing at a point.
So at what point does your business help people in this situation?
So the great thing about Level Financing is we don't just have one solution. We've got three different solutions that we go by. And not only do we have solutions, we have a coaching program that's super important, because the bottom line is not everybody, but a lot of the people that get into this situation, they need coaching to get out of it, and then they need coaching and habits to change. They need to change personal habits. One, and the biggest and most important one, is creating a spending plan and not going and doing impulse buys, okay?
Right.
And so, because if I waved a magic wand and got everybody out of credit card debt that had $38,000 in credit, our average client has $38,000 in credit card debt, which that's a lot of debt.
That is a lot of debt.
Dude, that's a lot of debt.
If you add 25% interest, what is the payment on something – like a 25% interest on a $38,000?
A $38,000 debt, take it times 3%, so that's about $900. You know, you're at about $1,200 a month on your payment on that.
And most of that
70% is going towards interest and fees.
And when he says interest and fees, that means basically your debt
is throwing it away.
Your debt's not getting smaller.
Just imagine just burning that money, and that $38,000 just sits there on your balance sheet or your whatever, and it doesn't go away, and you're just burning money month after month. It's the worst thing anybody can do.
Right.
So getting rid of the debt has always got to be bad debt, not a home or something like that, but getting rid of credit card debt has to be the number one priority, and you should go after it like you're, you know, like your life depended on it. And there's a couple different ways. One is a pretty easy way to where you don't have to go late on your payments, okay? Uh-huh. Where we just get the interest rates reduced down. So rather than paying 70% towards interest and fees, you'll right. start paying 30%, and then 70% will go towards the balance.
Gotcha.
And that'll get you out of debt in about 5 years, right. 4 or 5 years.
And the balance is basically what you actually owe.
Oh, correct.
Right. And the balance, so if you owe $30,000, and
your payment's $1,000.
If the payment's $1,000,
so then $700 starts going towards the principal rather than the opposite way where $300 gotcha. Goes towards principal and you're wasting.
And how are you able to do that? Because why can't I do that?
There was a thing that passed, like an act that passed, like in the 70s, I think it was, because they realized that these banks were getting people into this situation.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to just have it to where the only way out was bankruptcy. They wanted to have it to where there's these like consumer credit counseling or debt management programs. Right. So the way I have it, I have a nonprofit. I don't own a nonprofit. You're not allowed to own a nonprofit, but right. there's a nonprofit that we're involved in that's down in Florida, and that has agreements with the banks. And if you're in a hardship, they will go ahead and reduce down your interest payments. And the reason why they do this is because they're like, hey, might as well have a good client that got into some trouble, realizes it, shows us the hardship, and now we're going to go ahead and let them pay their way out of this and not charge them crazy interest, and that way they won't have to bankrupt, and then we'll lose all our money.
Gotcha.
Cool. So then the second way we do this,
though. There's a second way.
The second way is the most effective way, but people are so programmed to think that this is a bad thing because people don't like to go late on their payments.
Yeah. But people want to try to do their best.
Yeah, they want to do their best, but listen, man, let's go in and surgically strike when it's hot. You go behind on these credit cards. We know exactly when to go in and settle for 30 to 40 cents on the dollar. Right. And as soon as we do the settlement and it shows paid as settled,
right.
your credit score shoots right back up.
Right. That's what was crazy to me when you explained to me.
People don't understand.
Yeah.
People think that once you go late and you have these little dings on your credit, that your credit score is just screwed forever. It's not true. Once it's paid as settled, it was a FICO 9 act, and I think it happened in around and don't this isn't exact, but around that big 2008 wave,
uh-huh.
because the credit companies were like, oh man, we got all these people that had to go late and had to settle for less, so we can't just hold them down in a bad credit position for a long right. period of time. So they went and they made it to where the score shoots pretty far back up, and then after that, I can get Ashley, or the lady we work with, she goes in, man, she challenges all those things for different reasons.
So you have someone that comes in people. Is basically a fixer at the end
correct.
Of it and
correct.
Comes in and says, okay, let's now it's a rebuild, and that's part of the
correct.
What you guys offer.
Yes, gotcha. That's part of
and,
it.
And yep. I don't want to get too into the weeds
into
on
that.
This.
No,
but,
I don't either,
but
man.
The bottom line is
we get you out of the debt.
Your company gets you out of debt.
Correct.
And that's levelfinancing.com.
Yep. Levelfinancing.com.
Okay, good. And, yep. and this is important because I know that I've had some of my fighters that I referred over to you
yeah.
to kind of explain yep. them this deal. And,
yeah.
And, yep. and it's a nice thing to think about that things aren't permanent. Like,
no.
like hey, I've made some bad decisions or I've done this, I've done that, and there's a solution
yeah.
and I can work my way. You lose a fight, you work your way out, you get rid of your injuries, you build your skill set, and you get back
yep.
on top.
Yep.
Right? That's the same thing with the finance. So I love that. Let me just ask you, because you have now been through a recession, you got hit hard by the recession, and also came in 2008, and then also found a way back out of it. You're a fighter, you're an entrepreneur, an outside yep. thinker.
And that was the toughest. All honestly, that was one of the worst times of my life. Like, especially when you're second guessing yourself
yeah.
after you just had some success for only 2 years as a business person on your own.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, everything's upside down and you feel like a loser inside. You feel like a failure.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man. And you start all that self-doubt of maybe this was luck that I even was good in the first place. Maybe I'm not meant to be, you know, an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You can let that doubt creep into your head and really get you down. Don't let that happen. I mean,
gotcha.
Just if I had some to my two cents is do not let it happen. These things happen. And most of the guys that are super successful have been through one or two
yeah,
of these things.
Absolutely.
And they know how to figure it out.
So before we go into just highlighting some of the best-known celebrities that have gone into major, major debt by just on accident or making bad investments, et cetera. I just want to highlight some of the mm-hmm. people that have come out of it, some people that have stayed in it, some have died in it. Let me just ask you, in today's day and age with COVID and what's going on right now, the rate of unemployment, what do you see happening? I mean, do you foresee, just in your opinion, a major crash coming, or are there bubbles in this thing?
Yeah, there's. So it's pretty complicated. In my limited, opinion here, I don't want to like act like I'm some expert on this, but what we do know and what we do have interaction with is we're seeing people firsthand and what they're going through. So there's bubbles of, so this was very interesting. I asked my head negotiator the other day, hey, what are you seeing? She's like, honestly, we're seeing some people come to the table with chunks of money early and we're getting their debt settled out early. Huh. And I was like, wow, okay. And I said, well, what would you put that to? And she goes, well, a lot of these small business owners, a lot of these different guys that might have had a medium-sized business, there's a lot of stimulus money that got rolled out in the stimulus plan to small business owners right. and stuff. So those type of people, you know, that had $38,000 or maybe $70,000 in debt, you know, came into some money. And there's businesses that have not been really affected deeply by COVID. My right. business, for example, you know, we had we went up 50% in July from where, you know, we had one of our best months in 5 years during COVID. You know what I'm saying? Right. So there's businesses that are thriving right now. Now, with that being said, I don't want to, not address the fact that if you're in the service sector, hospitality, obviously restaurants are getting crushed right now.
Right.
Obviously retail, going in, shopping, clothes, whatever it is in retail is getting crushed. And it was already kind of getting crushed just because of this wave of online stuff.
All the online stuff.
You know,
yeah.
And I just don't know how people go in and buy all the clothes on the online and stuff. I always have to go in.
Yeah, you're old school. Yeah,
we're old school.
Having Jaslyn here,
yeah,
we get packages delivered like every couple
day.
Of days.
I'm yeah, like, she seems like a professional.
Yeah,
so she knows how to shop online.
She's also got yeah. brands that send her stuff, and
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah,
well, I've never had this many packages sent yeah. to my life. But that's the new age,
that's
right?
That's great. Yeah. So
yeah, it sounds like there's something coming.
I talked to a girl, just for example, I talked to a girl that's a good friend of mine that works down in the Soho House for the last 10 years
yeah.
in Hollywood. And you'd think that they would be taking care of their people. I mean, that's a pretty, you
that's
know.
That's established, pretty, yeah.
Yeah, that's an established, bougie, you know, club that I don't think it's going anywhere. And I know they have deep, deep pockets. Man, she's getting it. Like, it's very difficult for her right now.
Really?
Yeah, during the time when they got some unemployment and it was increased by the $600 a week or whatever,
right.
she was doing okay during that time. But that's since been, that's gone now.
Yeah.
And now she's looking for another job, you know, or a second job. So there's people that are getting deeply affected by this, like in hospitality and stuff. So
gotcha.
It's going to be really, really it's going to be painful.
It's going to be painful for a lot of people, and
yep.
and I mean, again, this MMA university is basically it's geared towards, you know, a fighter that may not have the life experience or the family experience or the education, etc., to learn a little bit more about what you do in the real world, because you're going to be your own entity as a professional
sure.
fighter. But this is obviously for anyone out there. Some of the famous people out there that have been into big debt, Michael Jackson. I mean, that guy is worth. Has made so much money in
yeah.
his life, died with $400 million in debt.
Yep.
Right? You got crazy. Guys like Nicolas Cage, and it's a storied career with Mike Tyson where he had all this money and was, you know, not educated on how to do it, went into massive debt. MC Hammer, 50 Cent, yep. Michael Vick, even a Mayweather, known for owing the IRS, but yep. all these people are learning their lessons. The guys that are still alive are learning their lessons and getting through it. And this could be a big resource for him. In closing, for me, somebody that has been through from the top to bottom career in mixed martial arts, started in the sport before it was even a viable option as a career, just remind you guys out there, and I tell my team all the time, and I try to, you know, emphasize the importance of it, but live below your means. at least until you understand
especially
the world
if you're
a little
in
more.
The fighter, man, and you're getting a chunk of money here and there, and you don't know when the next chunk's coming.
Right.
It, more than anything, there's no steadiness or consistency.
Right.
It's a very vulnerable position
and,
to be in.
And this is what I tell my guys all the time. Like, hey, you know, simplify. Go without. Don't be too prideful to where you want to keep up with the Joneses or get on the Instagram and have this and have that.
Yep.
There's things that you want and there's things that you need, but that doesn't mean you can't
enjoy
and you can't do things to build your credit in your future. A strong credit score is, in my opinion, if you know how to use it correctly, a lot more valuable than some money in the bank, right? It's something that you can build on right now by being thoughtful about it, and will pay big dividends when you come in the future and want to make your small amount of money into bigger money. And for me, as a personal success story in that realm, I've had, you know, a great career, but I wasn't making oodles of cash throughout my career. Was living below my means, but taking some calculated risks, some buying some real estate, putting money back into fixing it up, refinancing, taking some more money out, putting that into other things. And we're going to get more into that on another segment on buying your first house, or, you know, getting with an investment guy and saving for your 401k or your IRA or you know, the things that will set you up for your future if you're in a position to think like that. I had some great mentorship on that side, but I want to bring that to the table for you folks out there that may not have an idea of how to plan for the future. And so I appreciate you coming on, Bartlett. I hope people can get something out of this. Bartlett's going to be coming on as a regular guest. He's a big MMA fan, and so he's got his opinion on things and has some good introspective looks at stuff, on top of being a business guy that's failed. He's come from nothing and built something for himself. He's been a fighter in his own right. And so I hope you guys enjoyed that. And if you do need help with your credit card debt, it's levelfinancing.com. You guys check that out. Take advantage of it. And just a couple of terms to look up on the internet so you understand. What are some good terms for them to just have a basic concept of? Interest, like a mortgage. Look at what a mortgage is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just I don't know if I would necessarily have any good terms that would do.
Right, something that you could look at.
Listen, I just think it's important. There's a couple things that you touched on, not to get too down in the rabbit hole here, but, you know, if you're... The spending and the irresponsible spending comes from a psychology, and whether maybe it's because you grew up poor and you kind of feel the need to have to show off. You know, I struggle with some of that at times throughout my life. I've got that pretty under control, though. But
you do travel some of the best places on the planet, but that's self-care.
Yeah, that's like what I love. So
check out Bartlett's Instagram. It's was it Jason Bartlett?
Jason Bartlett.
Yeah. At Jason Bartlett, JasonBartlett.
Yeah, LETT.
LETT.
Yep.
This guy knows how to treat himself to some good travel.
So, but I think it's just important for the psychology part. It's like, you know, that's the part, the spending plan and the discipline is the most important thing. Because you just mentioned all these people that everybody knows, Mike Tyson or, you know, these different people that were crazy. If you're 50 grand a year or you're Mike Tyson overspending, it's the same principles.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter, man. Being broke isn't because of how much money you're making. You know, it's because of how much money you're spending. So it's living within your means. And I think you've been a great example of somebody that isn't really into flashy stuff. You're more into making, you know, good investments and doing the real estate thing. And that was your thing. I didn't see you trying to drive around in a bunch of fancy cars or, you know, doing that thing. And that just took a certain personality, a discipline, and that's a good thing.
But don't knock it. If you have things that you want in this world, don't be afraid to get them, but you got to do it responsibly.
Or do it responsibly.
Don't look cool in exchange for getting yourself into trouble.
For
so
sure.
Guys, this was a segment of MMAU on the CaliCast. I hope you enjoy it. Tune in. We'll be spending a lot more time spreading knowledge and live below your means. Thanks, Jason.
Right on. Thank you for having me, man.
Yep.
Boom.